What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have a very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very gifted and prolific musician. He is a musical genius and an innovator when it comes to composing, producing, and performing as a singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist for over three decades, and has released some of the biggest records to hit the airwaves. Please welcome Grammy-nominated singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist, Mr. Bobby Caldwell. How's it going, Bobby?
It's going good. How are you doing today?
Great, man. Such an honor to have you on my show, Bobby.
Pleasure to be here, man.
I'm such a longtime follower of your music. And, you know, I interview a lot of people, man. And, you know, before we start the show, I really got to take my hat off to you to What You Won't Do. That's got to be one of my personal favorite tracks of all time, man.
Well, thanks for saying so.
You know, it's been redone and it's been sampled by so many artists. And, you know, it's just one of those songs that's just timeless. And I think everybody who's a fan of music has it in their playlist right now.
You know, it ended up being a pretty amazing thing. I can't believe the life it's had. It's really extraordinary.
Wow. When did you actually create that song? I mean, when did it really hit the airwaves to become a commercial success that it did?
It hit the airwaves at the end of 1978, and finally made its way up to the top of the charts in 79.
Wow. You know, with your new CD, House of Cards, Bobby, I mean, there's such versatility on this new CD. You know, as I listen to it more and more, you know, you touch on so many different variations of music styles on a CD. And, you know, one of the tracks that really caught my attention is One of Those Nights. To me, it really has a really good Steely Dan feel to it, and it really has a good retro feel melodically and harmonically, man. It just really stands out to me.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. It was an interesting song to work on.
Now, how did you put all the CDs together? This particular project, I mean, what's different about this versus some of your other CDs that you released in the past?
Well, first of all, the CD's been a long time coming. So it's been, gosh, I don't know, 7 years since I made my last record. So that was kind of an interesting starting point because, you know, I had written a lot of songs and for the most part I thought I had assembled an album that was typical of Bobby Caldwell. And I had the opportunity to step back from it for a minute and just kind of started to rethink the whole approach and decided I wanted to do, you know, something that was a little more eclectic and a little more diversified.
Yeah.
And somehow at the same time still try to keep and trademark things, you know, that have been part of my past. And I think we did that, you know, and like you said, it is pretty much all over the map.
You know, a lot of blues, some country, definitely got the R&B soul in there and with the heavy, smooth jazz elements that I usually hear from you.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the trick for me was, like, hoping I wouldn't lose the current audience and maybe pick up, you know, in part, partially new audience along the way. And just try to do something that was not atypical for me.
Right.
Made it a lot more enjoyable a project for me because it's not music that's basically all the same genre. And stuff I felt really comfortable with.
Definitely. You know, Bobby, give me some background of how when you started in the music business, I mean, really taking it to the full level of a professional musician.
It was never a hobby.
Right.
From the moment I embarked on it, which was, I don't know, I guess, you know, 12 years old, I was dead serious at that point. So it didn't suddenly become a vocation. I just, you know, my first thought was to somehow make it a vocation because it's what I wanted to do.
Right.
And, you know, between the age of 12 and now, having just turned 61, I can tell you, you know, I'm still learning. So it's constantly a work in progress. you know, it's a soul journey, man.
It is, man. You know, I've always considered myself a student of the game. You know, I've been at it for about 22 years, and I'm only 37, Bobby. But, you know, along that musical journey, man, you learn so much, and you pick up so many traits and skills and techniques from other musicians and recording engineers. I'm really into sound recording, and, man, it's just never-ending. And, you know, I just really discipline my mind knowing that it's really what you pick up along the way, and it's a never-ending journey. It's all about the progress in that walk-along journey, man, to me.
And you're right. You're right about that, because, you know, I was always like kind of like a sponge over the last 3-4 decades, and trying to, like, you know, surround myself with people that I had something to learn from, something to gain from.
Yeah.
And it's amazing when you look at yourself, you're really just kind of like the sum total of all your influences.
Totally. And that's the cool thing, you know, especially if other people that don't know you can identify some of the other attributes you have in your music, the other elements and your influences, you know. So, you know, you're really hitting the mark, and it just, like you say, man, it continues work in progress.
Yeah. You mentioned Steely Dan, and, you know, I've had so many influences, but, you know, they're, of course, one of them. I don't know many people in this business who weren't impressed by Steely Dan, whether you're a diehard fan or not. But, you know,
right,
it certainly is an interesting approach to songwriting that they've offered us.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, all the legends, man, including yourself, man. You guys have such a timeless and prolific way of composing your music. And for me, it's just, I always tell some of the guys my age and even younger, if you want to really get to the next level of musicianship, you got to listen to the guys that are older, that have been there, that done it, you know, that have heard different progressions and different arrangements and so many different styles of music. It's because of the experience, you know what I mean? And the way you guys, you're tuning for your ear tuning, and the way you hear things and the maturity of your ear just really changes your development as a musician. And so I always encourage everybody to listen to the elders in the game.
Well, it's true. And when I started out in this business professionally, let me clarify that. When I started out with a recording career, there were no computers. There was no MIDI, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you either had to stand to deliver or forget it.
Totally. Yeah, that so, analog.
And that puts an interesting, you know, influence, I think, on growing up as a songwriter and a singer and arranger and player. I think you're forced to be more resourceful as opposed to, you know, leaning on technology and everything, which I got to say, I don't mind doing it all now. But I mean, hey, you know, the day that, you know, sequencing was invented was a glorious day.
It was.
It was really great. Great to be able to realize your vision and quickly. So, you know, but by the time sequencing came along, I pretty much, you know, had learned how to put a record together already.
Yeah.
Sequencing just made it, you know, the joy of being able to, like, program and realize certain things immediately.
Exactly.
As opposed to, like, you know, having an arrangement done and recording maybe more than 2 or 3 takes live and dressing it up and everything. I mean, it can be arduous that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You know, but I got to ask you, Bobby, man, as a keyboardist, from one keyboardist to another, the way you track in your DAWs now in your sequencers, are you one of the guys who really still play freeform all the way through in the entire song, or do you play it in parts and copy and paste and create your section and arrangements along the way?
You know, I got a lot of friends that just start in audio file. I don't. I start in MIDI file and then render it. When I'm done, I render it to audio file, and then from that point, you know, possibly do more editing and stuff like that. I don't know why I favor that, but sometimes, you know, I'll play things in real time, even in, you know, in MIDI formatting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially things like, you know, organ parts that you really got to play in real time.
Right.
Things that I really want perfectly quantized, you know. I like what MIDI has to offer as far as, you know, the different signatures, the different feels, the different swings.
Yeah.
You know, it can make the difference of how a song's grooving or not.
Totally. What are you tracking on, Pro Tools, Logic, or...?
I'm a Logic.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, and then I have I have a 32x8 Mackie digital, and I do most of the vocals through the Mackie. You know, I just like it sounds really fatter to me.
Yeah, the pre's on those are surprisingly good, man. A couple of
they
my
are
buddies.
Pretty darn good, and they, you know, of course, they stopped making the board. I don't know what the new incarnation is. I really haven't looked at it lately, but
no, that's been out for a minute, man. The 32x8 Mackie, you know, like I say, those pre's, a lot of my guys, you know, even with the drum miking and just basic vocals for live, it just sounds really good to them.
Yeah, it's got a lot of headroom in it, and it's nice. It works good. I'm kind of getting to the point of where I may just go, you know, total Pro Tools, the whole ball of wax, and, you know, because chaining everything is, you know, it gets a little cumbersome, but...
Right. Now, as you know, but as a guitarist, are you using any plugins, or are you strictly doing hardware as your rig?
No, I actually have an old Hughes Kettner preamp that I really love, and I kind of run that through an Avalon compressor, and I have, you know, a pedal rig.
Nice.
So I get my kind of amp presence from the used Kettner preamp, and then any additional modeling, I'm just using a GS10, you know, regular Boss foot pedal GS10.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll get in there and crawl up and, you know, start molding a sound, starting with the sound that it's close, and then I'll get in there and start molding it, and whatever I may need for the sound, whether it's, you know, some kind of a delay or chorusing or, you know, slight crunch or slight compression, the amp compression. You know, you can get in there and do all that, get tube sounds.
Right. Now, do you do much...
The Avalon is really great for, you know, just overall that nice sounding compression.
The Avalon 2022s, man, the stereo mic pre, I'm really got my eye on that thing.
I'm telling you what, that's what I want next. That's the way to roll, man.
Oh, my God, man. The clarity and sonic fidelity and that thing is just amazing.
Yeah, it's really a first-rate piece of gear. I'd never get rid of mine. I would like to have the stereo, though.
Yeah. You know, Bobby, for your compositions, man, give me some of your tips and some of your other experiences, John, maybe some of your other OPs that you personally do on your own, putting your songs together, building it from the ground up. I mean, do you usually start with your own, or is it the... writing of your lyrics that your songs come together? I mean, what really comes together first, the music or is it the lyrics for you?
You know, it's a couple of different ways I do it. Sometimes it's just the notion of a groove or a certain kind of beat. And other times, you know, I'll be sitting at the keyboard and come up with a progression that lends itself to a melody. But above and beyond that, you know, my number one mantra is, you know, if you reach that brick wall that we all reach sometimes, and you just can't push it through, you got to let it go. And I've done that a lot in the past, come back to something and be able to solve the problem. But for the most part, if it doesn't keep calling me back to finish it, it's probably not worth finishing.
Right.
So if I've got a really indelible melody in my head. It's not going to leave my head until I do something about it, you know?
Right. You know, but I think, like you said, man, we'll, especially starting out, you know, for me, when I started creating my music, I was about 14, man. I was really all over the place. It really sounded more like a jam session, more or less than structure and, you know, arrangement and things. And really trying to find that center in your compositions. That's really the goal, man. If we can just find the placements, you know, the timing of it, just really put it all together as a puzzle, man. You know, it takes time, but like you say, you just don't want to overbeat it, man. Reinvent the wheel. If it sounds great, then, man, let's just roll with it.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that, you know. When you start beating the song up, it's just, sometimes you can overshoot, you know, what was really great about it in the first place.
Right.
It's happened a lot to me, you know.
Yeah.
We just kind of totally screw something up, and, you know, you're trying to get back to where you were, and you can't.
You know, Bobby, playing all these instruments that you play, do we hear all of this? Is this all of you on the CD, or do you usually call in other session musicians to play on some of your songs that you created?
It's a lot, especially when I was living in Los Angeles, where there's just an abundance of incredible players.
Yeah.
All at your disposal, and I did, you know. In fact, I don't think I've ever played this much guitar on an album as the current album.
Wow.
Because I always, you know, I would call in Lukather or, you know, Michael Landau.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's so many great people out there to play guitar. And, you know, I've always been able to, like, put my vision out there and they'll realize the vision.
Sure.
Where I'm living now, there's nothing. I'm out in northwest New Jersey.
Okay.
I'm just outside of Philadelphia.
Sure.
And I had to farm some stuff out. Like, I got a guy named Dave Koz playing saxophone.
Oh, man, huge fan.
One of the songs, but, you know, I had to send him a file, and he was able to do it in Los Angeles. And there's a pedal steel player that appears on a couple of songs, and he's in Montana.
Wow.
So, you know, and I do have a couple of local guys that came in. The incredible sax player that lives in PA, and he's also in my band. That's Andrew New, and he's on one of those nights. And, yeah, he's all over that song.
Right. You know, the business has changed so much, Bobby, from the old analog days when we used to record. Now we're flying session files back and forth. You know, aside from the recording side of the business with the shift in, you know, how we create our music, the promotion side, what are some of your own personal marketing strategies that you've maintained in your campaign that's helped you stay in the public eye all these years?
Well, I guess, you know, the biggest thing for anybody, whether they're a newcomer or an old timer, I mean, you got to embrace the new paradigm, because it's just not the same business.
Right.
And, you know, I think we all saw this coming over the last, whatever, decade and a half, two decades, a slow erosion of everything. And then, you know, the inability of the major labels to deal with the downloads when they had a chance. They didn't think it was that important. You know, if you think back to Napster and everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, they dealt with that, and then another one popped up, and it's just continued. It was just something they never got past.
Right.
And combine that with just the general quality of records that, you know, save for really brilliant people that were making great albums like Earth, Wind & Fire and Toto and all that stuff. Music was kind of like slipping into this generic thing, and now it's more generic than ever. So I think, you know, embracing the new paradigm, which is, it's all about social media. So, you know, it's positioning yourself on iTunes, having a great, easily negotiable website.
Right.
With marketing, not just CDs, but trinkets, objects, T-shirts, hats.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. You know, having your stuff, if you're fortunate enough to be able to, you know, perform around, having your stuff visible and you visible at the shows, because people are definitely inclined to buy the album at location.
Right.
If they get a chance to talk to the artist and, you know, the artist can spend some time, you're going to sell a CD if you had a good show.
Right.
And we do just a huge volume of sales and live shows off the website and downloads. And it's almost getting to the point of where, you know, I think about the major label days and I'm, you know, their time was coming, man. It's over.
Right, right.
And I think once we come out of this, you know, learning curve, I think artists are probably going to be better off, you know.
Right.
There's still lots of entities that are trying to generate even further revenue, like BMI or ASCAP. Musician unions are doing more to aggregate earnings that are in the pipeline and stuff like that. I think, you know, I mean, let's look at it this way. If I sell 10,000 records, I'd have to sell 150 with a major label to make the same kind of money.
Wow, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, we do everything in-home, in a home studio. And we do the artwork. The people that actually do our website did the artwork on the album. It's not elaborate, but, you know, I'm looking at it right now. And the great thing about it is I can travel with these.
Sure.
I don't have to deal with busted jewel cases and all that crap. Or getting them open so I can
right.
sign them.
Right. No, the
you know,
packaging.
The CD syndrome, we're trying to get them open?
Oh, yeah.
A wrapped jewel box, I mean. It's just, forget it.
No, your packaging is top-notch, Bobby. I'm loving the cover, the artwork on it. It just goes well with the title. I mean, it's just A1 in my opinion.
And it's light, and it's, I got to tell you, this, I know you've heard of them, disc makers.
Oh, yeah.
They were running, and this is what they call, I guess, their eco pack, digipack, rather, with no, it's only got a tiny little spine on it, and you see when you open it up, the album comes right out, and it ships, I can take 1,000 with these in a suitcase.
Sure.
So they did, now you're going to love this, 1,000 that was the minimum order. So we just did an initial run so we could do promotion, you know, mail them out to all the stations and everything. So 1,000 for 79 cents a piece.
Wow.
That's with the CD, the artwork, everything. But I mean, I had to submit, you know, the artwork.
Sure.
In PDF. But you can see, if I sell them for $15, the profit margin, and I have to sell 100,000 with a label.
Wow. This is unreal. I mean, the packaging, like you said, man, it's top-notch. Really top-notch.
Yeah, you know, we didn't go to a photo studio. We went and we rented a room at a Holiday Inn and got a photographer. You know.
Right.
And backlit everything and tried to get, you know, some good shots. The House of Cards is a stock image from a gallery online. And, you know, that's the way to roll, I guess. Definitely.
Nope, that's it, man. You're right on the money, Bobby. You know, with your experience as a performing artist in the studio and a performing artist on stage, Bobby, finding that zone for creativity, is it in the studio where you can focus on your compositions, or is it on stage with your band members and the audience's energy?
It's in the studio. You know, I'm either in writing mode or recording mode, one or the other.
Right.
And I, you know, I don't do it year-round. It's like when I know I've got a project to do, is I kind of like focus at that point. It's not like back in the 80s, I was writing a lot for other artists for a while.
Right.
And I was literally writing year-round. I just don't do that too much anymore. It's really come to the point where I've had to, like, focus on my own thing.
Sure. You know, we're approaching that mid-year point in 2012, Bobby. What's on the musical agenda for 2012?
Well, I know this record's going to take me well into the at least halfway into the new year.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, I will have already been probably starting to get headway on forthcoming album after that. Then I've got another American Songbook album planned. Do some standards, which I can get done pretty easily. Just keep the doors open and, you know, keep doing what I do. I can't really, at this point, afford to stop.
Sure.
You know, it's just, I am hoping, you know, I've got high hopes for the record. But I've said that about a lot of records.
No, it's really great work, man. I mean, once people really hear it and really get into it, I know it's going to be one of their faves for this year, definitely.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that, man.
Well, Bobby, it's been a true pleasure and honor speaking with you. You definitely got a spot here at the Producer's Corner. I would love to have you back, talk about your new endeavors musically and a new CD if you ever come out with one, man.
Hey, thank you, man. Nice interview, too.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. Well, definitely stay in touch, Bobby, man. You have best of luck to you for 2012.
Okay, you too. All the best.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. And a big shout out and a thank you to Mr. Bobby Caldwell for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, just a big fan of Bobby's, displays such great musicianship and tracks over the years, great radio hits, and what You Won't Do is probably one of the biggest songs of all times. For more information on Bobby Caldwell, you can hit him up at www.bobbycaldwell.com, www.bobbycaldwell.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit me up at www.spudtootight.com, www.spudtootight.com. And to close out the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background close out the show, and it is off of Bobby's new CD titled House of Cars, and the title of the track is called One of Those Nights. So again, I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
Lost before, making small talk, there's such a bore. All you do, even up the score. Guess it's gonna be one of those nights. Close the doors, dim the lights, and then pour. Name of Jimmy the user, a well-known those nights. Yeah, one of those nights. I'm the master of the game, and it's gone.